Hey, what an intro.
Dan, my countdown.
Woo! Oh, dude. Monday Night Live is going to the next level.
I felt like we could have been crossing live to go on Sky News. It also took me back a little bit to the times I used to host the Firefighters calendar launches at like Eve Nightclub, but that's a different story. Well done.
Oh,
Matt.
Wow. Here we go.
That was so good.
What's cracking, ladies and gentlemen? Happy Monday. Harriet, Carmen is awesome. This is going to be great. There she is, Lacey Saville, excited as ever. Guys, I'd like you to welcome my special guest, Carmen Braidwood, to Monday Night Live. She's a media professional with 2 decades' experience in commercial radio and TV. That's 20 years for the ones that are a little bit slow out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, also a regular presenter on the Nines Network Destination WA and a corporate media trainer and confidence on camera coach. And this is interesting because when I you came to LinkedIn versus Instagram, I think that's where we first came in touch with each other. And then we encourage everyone to post afterwards videos. Yeah. And I saw your video on LinkedIn and I called up Brooke and I was like, geez, yeah, this video that this woman's posted, geez, she's so confident on camera. I'm like, she's like, that's the name of her business, you dickhead.
Oh, good. I'm placed on the physical embodiment of what it is I'm selling. That's gone really well.
You nailed it.
Yeah, and you did. You spoke my language when you said, you know, if you can, use video. Didn't you? Yeah. That was a direct Nat Bibby quote from LinkedIn versus Instagram. And one of the things I love about that sentence is if you can, because not everyone can.
Yeah, I feel like I should have just said use video. But I know there's, you know, I know there's some things you need to get over sometimes before you can be confident enough to do it. I mean, you don't even have to be confident, do you, to start, really? I mean, competence builds confidence. Would you agree?
I totally agree. You learn by doing. And that's definitely how we do it in the broadcast media. You know, I went to radio school, sure. Yeah, you know, I definitely went and did some formal training. But more than anything, the sooner they get you actually doing it, the sooner you're going to learn. And even, you know, I graduated from my radio school back in, you know, 2001 at Leaderville, the old Academy of Radio that's now defunct, and I wanted to be a breakfast radio presenter. Now, there's no way I was going to be straight onto a breakfast radio show there in Perth in my home city, fresh out of that radio school. Not even the best really do that. You've got to go off and do your thing. So I moved to the country. You know, I went to Kalgoorlie shortly after that and worked on radio stations where I was making ads and recording ads and doing the requests in the afternoon and very little listen to shift, just so I could get used to being live on radio. And the same comes with getting used to recording a single take of a video or going live here like you're doing in these kinds of interview formats for longer form content. Sometimes you just gotta get over yourself and do it.
Yeah, cool. I've got so many questions, but before I start being selfish about talking about creating video content and stuff like that, and being even the media, I'm interested to hear about that as well. Could you tell us, for the benefit of the viewers, because I know quite a bit about your story from what you've shared online, but could you tell us like how you got into why you decided to go down that route before you studied, and also then how you ended up doing like the corporate media training, you know, from a career in would you call it the media, entertainment or the media business?
Yeah, I guess so. The predominant part of my career has been in radio for the last 20 years, celebrating 20 years in radio this year. But before that, I was a murder mystery party host as a uni job. You know, I used to go and host parties where I'd have like a theme. I'm like, hi, I'm Carmen, get it. And we're going to solve the murder. You know, like,
wow.
Yeah, seriously. I was in theatre. I was into amateur dramatics. The best gigs I got were things like hosting murder mystery parties. I had another great gig where I was the constable care puppeteer that would come to your school and, you know, run a puppet show. Yeah, you know, these are the awesome sort of presenting gigs that were available to me in Perth. And I heard an ad on the radio on 96FM for their comms, which was for a radio school. And back then I was studying at UWA doing my arts degree. I was getting quite frustrated because I think I was really ready to go out and start earning money, but I found my degree a bit vague. You know, I was in English and history and philosophy and kind of weren't really doing anything very cool. Yeah, you know that vibe.
I did arts at UWA as well. So I do.
Yes. You get it. And it's weird. It's a funny uni environment. You'll know that when you're doing an arts degree, you've got four subjects you're studying in any given semester. The chances that someone else is doing those same four subjects, slim to none. So you didn't really have a cohort of people you were hanging out with. You know, there wasn't that, hey, let's go do beer 101 before we go to French later. You know, I mean the subject, not French. <right. laughs> That sounded so bad. I think when I did the radio thing, it appealed to me to hang out with people.
I spent most of my time at the pub, to be honest. Like, my cohort was just all the people that weren't going to the lectures. That's a problem.
Mine was my mates from high school. I just kept hanging out with them. I never went to uni. You know, and it didn't stop me from eventually finishing uni after I went to radio school, and I finished it off when I did some freelance work in the media. But yeah, it was a tough ask, wasn't it? You know, that kind of a degree to show up, because a lot was put on your shoulders to show some responsibility. And I think the teamwork of the media really appealed to me. It was also a real challenge. You know, I wasn't, even though I was doing the theatre thing, I did that because it challenged me to be able to nail a live performance. I wasn't the sort of person who found making small talk or conversation with a person older than me very easy, you know, or I wasn't naturally all that inquisitive and curious and asking questions about the world around me. And so radio really challenged me to figure life out and to ask questions of people who had seniority on me and get comfortable interviewing, get comfortable speaking, not just behind a microphone, but eventually on camera as well. And, so it was a real big challenge. And through the years, I got more TV work. And then I guess the media training thing happened when in 2017, I was working at 96FM. I'd been back here in Perth after moving all over Australia working in regional radio stations. I'd been back here in Perth for 7 years doing that breakfast show. And, the company that owned us over on the Eastern States, ARN, decided the show's gone. Overnight, you know, they came in, sat us down on a Monday. They like didn't really even say thanks for today's show, just sort of said today's show was your last. It happens a lot in radio. So I probably had always been kind of mentally preparing for that moment. And I had this little seed of an idea that I would teach businesses to speak on camera and other media skills that they would need for their social media content. And that was because I'd kind of taught my husband to do the same thing for his business. He's a chiropractor, and, you know, way back when we first met 10 years ago, he was the one who sort of said, oh, do you reckon you could teach me to present like you do on Destination WA? And I didn't even know why he'd want to do that back then. That was how little I really understood. Yeah. But he was the one who said, oh, I just want to be with my patients when they're not in much treatment room, you know, give them that extra support so that they know how to treat themselves if they're in pain and get a quick win from it. And I even said, well, hang on, why would they come and see you anymore if you give away all your intel on the internet? And he said, well, that's the point. You know, they're going to frame me as the expert, and when they're stuck, they're going to call me every time. And that's all obvious stuff. It's the stuff we all know. He has. that's given me some space, I suppose, to have the last 3 years to go through some serious imposter syndrome before I really put myself out there doing the conference on camera.
I'm surprised.
And the media is really competitive, which is probably not news to you. And I think that there's a lot of comparison that goes on in the media, particularly for women. You know, there's always shows with two men and one woman. So you've got this feeling that there's only so many women in the city who can do a certain job, and or there's only so many jobs for tens of thousands of women who might want to do that job. So you're always feeling like you've got to stand out from the pack, but you're also looking at other people thinking, well, they could do that better than me. And I think it was really hard to understand that people would want my 15 years back then, or 16 years of radio and television experience, and want to pay for that at that stage, because I had a lot of self-doubt going on, because, you know, my show had just been axed. I felt like I hadn't been in it as long as all these other people that I saw around me doing a better job, or who still had their job. But the fact is, those people still doing it didn't have the time to go out and teach confidence on camera. And those people also just don't have my personal experiences, you know. I think that journey of having to get confident on camera, you know, as being someone who wasn't naturally extroverted and who found just radio a challenge, then to actually branch out to TV was a bit of a thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I soon realised it was me that I was able to market and do so confidently, and, yeah, it's been working out.
Yeah, well done. That's so cool. That's so awesome. You know, like I was actually listening to 50 Cent do an interview recently, and he said, he goes, it doesn't matter how smart the people in the room are, like how much smarter they are than me in all these different areas, one thing they can't do better than me is be me. So so I just always try to be myself. By the way, like I think when I'm coaching people, when I'm training people, the first thing I always try to do is get tell a story that bridges the gap between us, so they don't think, oh yeah, he's just the expert, he's always known how to do everything, and people are more relatable, they're more likely to trust you. So I think, you know, I think it's a advantage that you've been through all of that stuff, because those are the people that are probably going to need your help, and they're going to believe it's possible because you're an example of that.
Yeah, that's definitely what's emerged. You know, I've really connected with other people who've struggled with their own imposter syndrome, with that connection to perfection as well. You know, for a long time since I left the radio show, I knew I had this cool idea, but I was too scared to start making the video content to support it, because I thought that because I'm a TV presenter, it had to look amazing. It wasn't. Yeah, and I had a coach who said to me, but hang on, you're not a video editor, are you? And I'm like, nah, don't know anything really about making actual videos. And he's like, well, why are you trying to do perfect videos? Are you a presenter? Yeah, teach people to be confident on camera. That's what I do. You know, it's about performance. It's about the presentation. I can give you some great hacks to make cool videos on your smartphone on your own and get captions on that video and a workaround or two to help you do away with that connection to perfection. And that's once I really niched down onto that, that made all the difference, you know.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. And you start getting the message out there.
I've been a bit, God, I'm so excited to interview you. I've like dove straight into the questions, but who have we got on the call, guys? Drop in the chat, say hello. I know we've got Harriet, and we've got Lacey, and we've got Louise, and we've got this anonymous LinkedIn user who sounds like a bit of a legend. But drop in the chat and say hello. Let us know where you're tuning in from. I know that there were some questions that have popped on LinkedIn in advance, so we're going to get through all of your questions in a bit, so make sure you drop them in the comments and say hello so we can give you a bit of a shout-out. And let's get back to it. So when you go to learn about radio, I imagine you're learning about like all sorts of things from it. But from a presenter's point of view, what do you think like some of the fundamentals are about presenting on radio, and how do they differ from presenting on camera?
I think that something that I have used as a radio presenter who's switched to TV has been the ability to foster connection and intimacy through the medium that you happen to be using at the time. So when you're on radio, you only have the audible medium to work with. Mm-hmm. And so not only are you just talking to that, you know, that golden rule of just talking to one person, don't say things like everybody and y'all and what are y'all up to and, yeah, all those things. You know, we're really trying to make it feel like, you know, these days especially, if someone's got, you know, earpods in, listening to you on the radio, like how intimate is that? Like, that's visceral. If you visualize that you had just got a direct route through two holes in someone's head to talk to them, you want to take full advantage of that. So you're painting a picture. You're making use of pauses and those really intimate connected phrases so that the person listening to you doesn't just get information and isn't just entertained, they're actually liking you and connecting to you and feeling something and changing because of things that you're saying. And, you know, it's been now, what, coming up 4 years since I've had a regular radio show weekdays, and I still hear from people who tell me that I got them through a really difficult time just while they were listening to me in their bakery first thing in the morning. You know, I've had that, often bakers and farmers on tractors and people who get up really early in the mornings, because I've always worked on breakfast radio shows. You know, people just close some seriously personal shit to me, and that's because they feel like they know me based on all those personal stories and moments of connection on an FM radio show, you know.
But when I listen to you, your voice, it's like, I know this must be intentional. Like, it's more interesting than, you know, when you're presenting, like the tonality and all that sort of stuff. What, you know, I know you, because it's very similar to like other friends I have that have worked in the media, like, I know Jules Lund really well in Melbourne, and my other mate, who's a chiropractor in Perth, funnily enough, his wife's a presenter, worked at Crown for a long time, and she does it as well.
Do you? Yes, that's right. Okay. I know all of us chiropractor / media personality combos. We know each other. We hang, you know. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah,
and it's a learned thing. You know, our voices, we're very critical of our own voices, and broadcasters go through this crappy journey that I definitely went through, where I had someone tell me my voice needed to be lower, who didn't work in radio. And so I spent 10 years trying to speak like someone else and changing all of my intonations. And you hear newsreaders and news hosts and news reporters do it still all the time, because they've obviously got someone telling them that their voice is too young sounding. You know, I've had this kind of naturally high-pitched young girly voice. And so you're always trying to do vocal exercises to bring it down. But then you spend the next part of your career just trying to undo all that and just be comfortable with who you are and speak like you. And then you just amplify it by whatever necessary to again to infiltrate the media that you're using at the time. So when you are robbed of visual stimuli as you are as a radio broadcaster, you've got to, and you're really allowing me to get my radio nerd on right now, Nat. This is great.
Have you got a podcast, by the way? Do you have a podcast?
I did a podcast called People of Perth about interesting people I've met through my community.
That's
on
right.
Facebook.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah, so there's that. But I don't actually have another podcast. And I think if I do anything like that, it's probably going to be more like this. It'll be a vlog cast.
May as well. Yeah.
Yeah. These days. Yeah. Yeah. But
well, this will be on the Spotify and iTunes and stuff. It always posted after that. Yeah.
That's right. And people will understand that. You know, you have to penetrate further. So you use your voice to do that. And you do that with energy.
Right.
Jules Lund is a great master at it. Like, you just know it's Jules. You can hear him on radio or on a phone call, and you can just tell from his turn of phrase that it's him. And when you see him on Getaway, when he used to do that show, he was exactly the same. He had that same attitude going on in his pieces to camera. So, you know, that's a very heavily client-controlled show, as is Destination WA, in a similar format that I'm working on these days. Yeah. We love our clients. We've got to deliver a client message, but it's no point doing that like a robot. You got to do it in a calming way.
Course.
And Jules does it in a Jules way. Yeah.
Well, he was telling me that when he got the Getaway gig, like he prepared for prepared a 2-minute video or 3-minute video for that, and it said it took him 12 months to complete the video. That's how much effort he put into applying, because he was on his, you know, goals to get the gig. What was it like getting the gig for Destination WA? Was it very competitive? Well, you got any interesting stories like that?
Oh, what happened? Gosh, what can I tell you? What happened?
Was it just a straightforward interview process like a normal job, or did you have to do a bit more than that?
No, it wasn't that. I'm trying to remember. I had been a part of a pilot program, a live show that Nine wanted to make. And this is while I was at 96FM doing the breakfast show. So there was a great producer called Ed Hobbs working at Nine at the time, who has a lot of experience doing live television right around Australia. And he wanted to do like a Monday Night Live, but in Perth, something on TV, panel show. And I'd had quite a cool role on that panel show, and it would have been bloody awesome if it had come off. Yeah. But we recorded the pilot and everything. And then there were a couple of shows like Destination WA, like there was that and another show in the market at the time, and the other one got wind of me sort of doing more TV, and probably through I was really good with my personal brand the whole time I've worked in radio. I always knew I wasn't always going to do a breakfast radio show, so I was always like, here's what I'm up to now, doing a bit of TV, always wanted to do this. Yep. And sharing my story. And so I got an opportunity to go and work at the other one, and so that's when I went to Nine and sort of said, I don't know if this pilot's going to happen, but if it does, wouldn't you rather I was working on your travel show than their travel show? And and so I kind of a bit like, Jules spent 3 years putting together a video tape. I guess I worked my kind of contacts and played against their sense of competition to get myself a job. And since then I've had to keep it. It sometimes does take a bit of trickery.
Marshall, shush.
Hey, Marshall.
Let's say hello to a few people here. So we've got, I might have already brought Louise up. And hey, we've got Louise. Our friend over here. We also got Najma Khan. She was at LinkedInverse Instagram as well. Hey, Nathan from Perth. The Perth squad's showing up. Chris wants to know where my red wine is. Mate, I've let the team down there. I'll make sure I have one immediately afterwards, I promise.
I'm still trying to come up from the weekend. I can't drink red wine now.
We had this great idea, me and all the guys on Monday Night Live, basically just me rambling on, but that I would start drinking red wine in my Monday Night Live so I could eventually get a sponsor to send me a case of wine. That's the plan.
Aim for an organic wine, something with no preservatives, so you can drink as much as you want without getting a hangover.
I literally had an offer for that exact thing. You see it around in Perth now. It's called Purple Rain, it's called, right?
Oh, like Prince.
Sorry?
Like Prince, the purple one. Yeah, awesome.
But it's what it is it's purple wine, right? So
really?
And he was telling me all the benefits of it, the health benefits and everything, and he wanted to, sponsor LinkedInverse Instagram, and he wanted to sponsor Monday Night Live. And I was like, okay, just send me a couple of bottles, right, and let me see what it's like. I'm not going to say it's bad on the live, but it wasn't my favorite wine. But I thought, if he's going to offer me some, maybe the other guys will too,
That's a good point. Yeah. And you can just try one until you genuinely make a connection with a product that you love and only endorse that one. And I think
I want Vino Mofo. That's who I want, is Vino Mofo.
Because of the name?
No, because I order all my wine from them anyway.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. I love it. Yeah, great idea.
Anyway, I'm going to keep spamming them until they respond. We'll see what happens. yes, being on camera seems to be becoming a standard skill to have, especially after all. Can you hear a lot of squeaking in the background?
Yeah. Go Marshall. Likes to be part of the show.
Yeah, so good.
My dog Piper at some stage. She likes to chime in.
So I'll show you this quickly. Look at this. Look, come around here. Look, this is what he's done. Can you see he's ripped up all the teddy bear?
And taking the squeaking out. He's vicious.
Stuffing. Mate.
What is he? A 10-kilogram dog, if that, and he's done that much damage. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Piper has never done
that. Hey, Paola, thanks for joining us. Good to see you. Part of the squad. Any trick to getting used to talking to a camera or yourself on screen? That's a really good question. I'd like to know that answer to that as well. Yeah. What are your thoughts?
Try not to look at it. This comes up a lot. This is actually one of the really regular pain points that I hear from people is that seeing their reflection does a few things. One, it can really fill people with a very distracting sense of self-judgment. And that can be very debilitating for a lot of people. So to mitigate that, I really do suggest you get rid of it. So I have been looking down, at yourself, Nathan. But this is it. So a few examples, yes. So in something like this, I would suggest you try and minimize the screen so you're only looking at a tiny version of yourself and it's just harder to actually focus on it and you can ignore it. Other clients I've even told to minimize it completely and have it over the – I've now just moved you onto the other screen that I have here and I'm only going to look into the lens of the camera.
Yeah.
It's distracting. But you're holding up your phone. I look if I dart over there and have a look at you. With your phone, if you can, don't use the reflection thing. Turn the camera around and look into the actual camera.
Yeah, interesting, yeah.
First as well, yes.
Yeah, you've got to clean it because it gets dirty, doesn't it? Yeah.
Hell yeah. So much dirt and crap gets on that lens. So, always clean that lens. As I love Brooke Linovich loves to really lean on that tip, which is a belter. But, instead of using that function where you can actually see yourself, just record the normal way and turn your camera around. And the next step to that is people often say, like, how do I frame up the shot? Trial and error.
Yeah.
But it's worth it. It's worth it because you will just start being more natural immediately. You're just not going to focus on seeing yourself all the time and you won't have that eyes darting down thing that if you're a bloke in particular, it makes you look like you're looking at someone's boobs. And that's gross.
I'm guilty of doing that with the camera and the other example you mentioned.
I know, exactly. it's not very professional.
as a joke. I'm just joking. I'm going to do that. Like, I'm going to try that. I'll see what happens because I find it a little bit more challenging doing this thing. I guess it's okay when I'm just doing an Instagram story or something, but whenever I want to shoot content, I always I always do it professionally and I normally use what I've already got. But like if for me to just sit there and put it up and shoot it, quite often I don't really feel that comfortable. So I might try that tip. I don't feel comfortable. I just don't think it's that good afterwards.
And that happens to all of us, and I think that's really wrapped up in that scientific fact we know that we sound different in our head to what we actually sound like in real life. So you've got your voice coming back at you in real life, which is always a bit of a surprise. And then you have all of your physical tics and habits that are coming back at you as well. We've all got them. Those are things that make you who you are. And your friends and family aren't stopping you going, stop with your hand movements all the time. Just try and show yourself on camera the same kindness that you show other people. As you be your own coach and you watch these things back, know that the person you're talking to isn't watching for those things. They're actually wanting to dive into your expertise that you've probably done a really good job establishing on the internet already. So why not give them something?
Well, it's interesting because I have to create content with I was interviewing people that were pretty good on camera already, like social media influencers and stuff. And then I started, offering as a service to clients where I would like interview them and then would chop it up into lots of different micro content. The reason I interview them is so that I could bring out the content that's going to be interesting. The only way that I can make them comfortable in front of the camera is to make them feel like it's not there. So when I'm interviewing them, I lean right forward like this. I'm looking at them straight in the eye so they don't look at the camera.
Yes. Otherwise, it's human nature to want to look into that camera. And that's why when you do try that interview technique, as a news journo, and I was working, reporting, you'd always have to set yourself up to be the side of the camera, but do your best to really distract that talent from the camera. If you were doing them a favor, like a show like Destination WA, we really do spend some time working with people to make sure they're comfortable. But you will see people who are uncomfortable on the news all the time. And if you see them look at the camera, look how scared and stunned it makes them look. It's really, and if you're a journo wanting a smear piece on somebody, that's like music to your ears, you know, because they look cagey and nervous. Mm. So, you know, as a media trainer, I do a lot of work with people, particularly who are launching products. And a great one recently called Liquim, which is a coronavirus treatment. It's a mask and a spray. And they were very, very scared that they would be perceived as wanting to offer an alternative to a vaccine, and their whole story would go down this awful vaccine route instead of being a good news story, which it is. It's a good news story because it's a response to the World Health Organization asking for scientists to rally and come up with a solution to help us all cope managing the coronavirus. You know, it's a cool story. So we had to work with the inventor to make sure that he just didn't say anything that went down that street by accident. You know, and that's practice. You know, they, if you're being interviewed by the media in that interview format, you're doing anything you can to avoid that impulse to look directly down the lens and speak to the lens is so important in that circumstance.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Whereas
when you're the presenter, engage the lens and be the one in charge.
I'm with you, So you must get, like, as a corporate media trainer, you must get called into, like, emergency situations, surely, where somebody's all of a sudden in the media, didn't plan to be in the media, and now's either got to defend themselves or has got an opportunity to promote their business. Like, if you had to coach someone, like, literally, who was, like, going to be on the news that afternoon, what would you tell them?
If I did get that call, I'd have a couple of things to say to them. I think that everything that comes out of your mouth in any public setting, you want to make sure you're comfortable with it going on the front page of the paper, otherwise don't say it. And so any of your responses from there on in need to be run over with that fine-tooth comb. And then I would say, hey, I know some really amazing media trainers and crisis handlers who can get you through this. The work that I prefer to do, because I have that more entertainment-focused background to my broadcasting career, and some news and News Talk. I worked at 6PR and continue to be on the books at News Talk 6PR here in Perth. You know, for me, I enjoy the work where we're really just helping people find their voice on camera, you know, and not fear in approaches from the media and know how to not get themselves into that circumstance in the first place. If you had a genuine crisis, I could give you some advice, but then I'd be like, hey, call my friend at XYZ. They're going to make sure you don't stuff this up any further than you already have.
Well, I mean, that's it can be a perfect storm, really. Like, if you stuff something up and then you're in front of a situation where you're not comfortable in being on camera in the first place, I mean, I can imagine it would happen a lot.
And that's why you've got to be proactive, like that client I mentioned before. You know, they saw that there's an alternative narrative that they didn't want to come out, and that's just because one or two incorrect questions could have taken it that way, or incorrect answers to that question. Do you hear the dog now? She's here now.
I was wondering if it was your dog or my dog. It's your dog.
That's Piper. She just got back from her walk with my husband, and maybe someone else has turned up at the house, and there's noise. Yeah, she loves it. Yeah, she's home.
Let me hop. I'm just going to hop on LinkedIn and see what other question we had, because I know there was one that was posted before we went live. All right, let's have a look here. Oh, there's so many comments now.
Thank you for your comments. Awesome.
Where is one of the questions that was being on camera? Oh, yeah, someone wants me to ask about Zoom calls. But before that one, if you currently use video marketing, would you think it's worthwhile creating a podcast platform as well, or stick to one area and smash it? Chris Holland.
Ah, okay. I have thought, if you're ready to grow in another platform, then go for it. And you probably have thoughts around this too, Nat. I think that if you're smashing one platform already and you're at your content creation maximum, then don't go changing it, because as soon as you throw something else in there, that's time you could be spending fostering that audience. But again, amplification reasons, then if you can find a way to outsource, just lift, like repurposing content is your friend in that circumstance. And you, radio and TV stations do this more and more and more and more to massively wonderful effect. You know, they'll have a breakfast show that they cut down into little snippets that play across the day on the station, but then also into advertising that rolls out on social media. Then they make a podcast from it. They've also got a video cast of the whole thing. You know, like the good ones are on multiple platforms. So if you've got people who can help you rip that content and put it into other platforms easily, then I would say, yep, great, make a podcast of the same thing. But if you're like me still and you're sort of just one person employing a few VAs every now and then to help you and it's going to throw you into tailspin trying to keep across it, then no, just stick to the one thing for now, you know, and grow that and have social media to support each of those and then worry about creating fresh new content.
Yeah, yeah. And I think as well, Chris, like if you've got an audience on your video thing already, maybe just ask them if they listen to podcasts because maybe they do, maybe they don't. I mean, I like what Carmen said before about like being directly in their ear. I do feel like because when I listen to podcasts, I normally go on long walks or something. Yeah. So I feel like if I want to be able to, like if they want long form content, it's a really great way to consume it. But I don't have a huge audience on my podcast channel. Well, I shouldn't say that. I'm grateful for the audience I do have. It is big and it has grown a lot in the last couple of years, but it just doesn't compare to YouTube or LinkedIn, like in terms of size. But I just think it's much more intimate. Like I seem to have a much stronger relationship with people that watch the long form or listen to the long form content. So yeah, it's an interesting one. It's one I've experimented with. So I just thought I'd add a couple of comments, but it depends where your audience is and how easy it is for you to repurpose it and integrate it with what you're already doing, like Karen said.
Yeah, exactly. I just think that anything consistently is wonderful, you know, and what you're able to do with video content in long form, whether you pick it up and put it into a podcast or not, is so powerful because you get that additional layer of like and trust, don't you? When people can see you're a real dude who moved house and is in the master bedroom doing the show, you know, like that's good. You know, for a long time I didn't want to do this sort of stuff because I was like, oh, house isn't set up for it. But then the virus hit and I had to do my radio show from this very room. So I sort of got my act together and I got a green screen and I kind of did some things that allowed me to use my front living room. At one stage during the virus, I was sleeping in here because my husband's a health professional. He came home and I'm vulnerable with all my sicknesses. So we're like, we can't see each other. So I did my sleeping here. My food was delivered to the frontish door here. I did workouts on the floor. I did
a
show on 6PR over there with the skyline. And then I started making video content to get people to come onto my first Confidence on Camera program. You know, like,
that's amazing.
And awesome. I think people were drawn to the authenticity of this going, whoa, my world just imploded. I live in a room now and now I want to offer this product, you know. And that was because I lost so much MC work and the TV show stopped shooting. And, I couldn't go into the radio station anymore. Ryan had to close his chiropractic clinics, you know. So, like, everything around us just changed. And I think people really, really related to that. And the ones... Yeah. Who did relate to it in particular as a happy coincidence needed to learn to be confident on camera for all their work from homes and trainings. You know, some really proficient trainers out there do in-person training and then they're faced with having to suddenly do it without any kind of response from their audience. And if you're a person who thrives, gets all their energy from that audience, that is the most crap thing to suddenly go, oh, I'm getting nothing back. And you just get all this self-doubt and fear about your ability to help people, you know? So,
A couple of things. First of all, you mentioned the master bedroom, and I think we talked about that. Well, we weren't on air. So I just want to let everyone know that this is my master bedroom in my new apartment.
Nothing is sacred with me, Nat. Sorry about that.
No, but like, it's good because I can see through that window behind, I can see the ocean. It's dark at the moment, but. So this was supposed to be where I sleep, but the first night I only managed to get a mattress in here because I just hadn't moved in, and there was a bit of traffic noise which like really annoyed me because I was so exhausted from moving I couldn't sleep in. So I'm in the second bedroom now, and this is the office, but like I get to look at the ocean, so that's cool. I there's a lot of people in business, right, that make videos that are confident doing it, but are just really boring. Like they're just boring videos, you know.
I bet their videos don't contain their stepson walking out the door to play tennis. See you, Joel. Have a good night. Bye. Yeah, and you're right. They are boring, and it's because people.
It's just
so
the energy.
Scared. It's energy. It's hooking. You know, like give us something.
Excuse me.
Hooking. Haven't you heard about hooking? So, you know, if you don't dangle a carrot and give us a reason to hang around.
Yes.
Then we're not going to within that
so
first
important.
Opening sequence of the video. You know, there's that, the energy bursting through the screen, being a little bit extra to what you really are in real life, just so we can get a sense of who you really are. And don't be afraid to let those personal elements shine through. You know, my best performing videos on Facebook and Instagram that I thought would never work on LinkedIn, and I used to hide them from this professional veneer I'd created on LinkedIn because I was so intimidated by it, are the ones that I stuck on that have Piper the dog barking in the background. Or Joel, my stepson, and his mates turning up. Imagine recording a video, like you're all doing full game face doing a video, and in walks like an 18-year-old, his best mate, you know, and you've known both of them since 9. They roll in, see you, and his girlfriend. You're like, oh, you're here. Oh, good, great, great. And you know what? I didn't stop. I wrapped it up. I just said, so that's why you should just go for it, post the video anyway, something like that. And you know, and that comes from years and years of practice and knowing how to just stay coherent even when those awkward circumstances arise. And you anybody can do that. You just have to start putting yourself into those uncomfortable situations so you learn the muscle memory of how to get out of them.
Definitely one thing that I have done is I was very conscious at the start when I made videos that how terrible they were, and I need like way more practice than everyone else to get good at this. So I just thought I'm gonna create a lot more content than everyone else, and I'm gonna post a lot more. And when this live stream came out, this live video on LinkedIn, and I was like applying for it because not everyone has it, right? I was one of the beta testers, and I remember applying for it, going, "I hope I don't get it," because I was like, "I don't want to go live." And my plan was to go weekly, you know, on one night a week so that it was a show, because no one else was doing that. None of the other beta testers were doing it. And I don't know why I picked Monday. It's like, like long weekends, you know.
Yeah.
I'm going live. Like, it doesn't matter. I don't know if I've got any better or worse, to be honest. I know I've definitely got a lot more comfortable with making mistakes, though.
Yeah. I think that's the only possible byproduct. And I think you do actually get better because, like you hinted at before, you ask the following what they like, you know, and you notice what they respond to, you know. So you know that personal stories are a great way to bridge that gap between someone who appears to be an expert, you know, or in my case, someone who appears to be a polished TV presenter and Joe Blow who's watching The Thing, you know, and you know that because you get the most response to your personal stories. You know, you turn up to LinkedIn versus Instagram with your mum, and people like me in the audience go, oh, gosh, I hope one day Joel takes me to one of his work things and tells the whole audience about his daggy old stepmom, you know. Like, that's motive. Like, you change people when you do things like that. So you know, we know we can test and you do get better because you get more comfortable sharing those personal things and you get better at telling stories that you know are going to work for your audience. You get better addressing pain points, you know, and thinking like your ideal customer and actually going, well, haven't we all been there when we've recorded 50,000 different takes of a video and then never posted it? You know, like that's a very relatable experience that even I went through, you know. That was the biggest turning point, I think, with being able to turn this into an actual business, is that I realized I didn't have to have those perfect videos, and no one should. really.
We should start like an Instagram contest, right? Where people have to post their worst video that they've ever done. Because like I've got them all on my cloud. Like I could track some real horror ones down, I reckon.
That would be a great idea. All the awkward moments that in the middle of it, you know, you just wear your ass off and like you can't use this one now. You know, but tip from a broadcaster, do your best not to swear around a live microphone unless you're okay with that being on the front page of the paper tomorrow, and then go for it. It depends on your audience.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. There's something else I wanted. Oh, sorry, that's right. I've got to ask you about virtual meetings. We're all doing a lot more of them. Ooh. Whether they're on Zoom or Google Meeting or Microsoft Teams, and I guess it's different circumstances under which you would use them. You could be motivating a team. You could be making a sale. Like I've seen people sell yachts on Zoom, so you could be doing that. And then also I guess there's the one-to-many webinar, like virtual workshops are all online now. What are your thoughts around being confident in those scenarios? Is it a similar sort of approach? Yeah.
I think that some people underestimate their value and their worth even still. You know, we've had no better an experience in the last 12 months to help us sort of crystallize why video comms are worth taking the time to get right. You know, look at all of our important people. You know, our prime minister and our premiers are using video communications to great effect right now. You know, you can be far more direct with your messaging. You don't have to overcomplicate the written word. You know, when you're writing things, you have to make sure you don't make a mistake and you're not misunderstood. But when you're able to convey emotion, you can achieve a lot more, much more quickly. And so an emergency is very, very important. A lot of companies will do that internally. I do believe that inside airlines, you know, in the last 12 months and things have gone wrong, that their CEOs have been showing up on camera for their staff to help them offer that sense of security. So getting back to your question, it is worth, you know, there's great evidence and track records from big, big leaders all over the world for getting video communications right. So if for a start, if you have Zoom anything or Google Hangouts anything, it is really worth for your personal brand or for the brand that you represent taking some time to get the thing looking half decent. You know, there should be light on your face, not behind your head. Get comfortable engaging with that camera so that you can speak in a more natural way that your staff would be used to seeing you in a meeting room. And remember that with that screen, you've suddenly got to be a little more engaging and entertaining. You know, no one wants to sit there. Think about yourself. Do you want to sit there and watch like a three-hour meeting? I've heard of people having three-hour Zoom calls in business, and there's just, for a start, as soon as I hear a three, I'm banging my microphone like a true broadcast professional. I do that every interview. But you know, if I heard about a three-hour Zoom meeting, the first thing I'm going to think as a 40-year-old woman is, holy shit, I just drank that. When am I going to wee? You know, like don't make your audience feel uncomfortable unnecessarily. You're putting yourself on the back foot, you know. So instead, start your Zoom meeting by saying, we're keeping this really short today. We've got this, this, and this to cover. Three major points, that's enough for anything. Never try and make more than three major points anywhere. You know, here's what we're going to cover. It shouldn't take more than half an hour, 45 minutes. Any questions? Give people lots of chances to engage with you and be a part of it. Make sure they're in the room, you know. And if you have got staff who are new to it, intimidated by the experience, it doesn't hurt to have a little bit of a briefing. You know, just say, look, here's your first Zoom call. Be aware that we can see you, you know, like when we can see you. Don't go to the toilet in the middle of it. You know, all those things that some people just don't realize, and it matters about getting it right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big problem. I mean, it's a massive problem with teams around the world. I've looked into this. Like it's this because this company, like, what was it? Press Reader, that's it. Press Reader, they I saw this article that came out, and they'd hired a marketing agency to spice up their internal communications, their Zoom meetings. And so what they did is they hired The Rock, Mark Zuckerberg, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like a few other celebrities, and they got them to crash their Zoom meetings. So like, yeah, if you're having a Zoom meeting, and then Arnie pops in and he's like, "Hello," he's like doing some bicep curls, and
I thought
it was hilarious.
Yeah. Hamish Blake was doing a Zoom for one more. You know, imagine having Hamish just bounding on your work Zoom.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Zoom for one more. And, you know, he always had something funny. I can't remember if Andy was doing it as well, but, you know, they were doing funny little things. Yeah. And it just adds spice. I mean, the best companies, you've worked with some amazing brands in your time, the best companies that I've worked with in radio would always do great things. You know, they'd take you to an awesome location for a meeting, or they'd simply have a rooftop at the building where you'd take business events up to sometimes. You know, it just makes it more exciting and dynamic to be an employee of that place. And I think as employers, as HR departments, as recruiters, you've got to get more creative with the way we do things now in the digital space as well. You know, it's worth investing in. It's not a phase. It's not going away. You know, you're going to have employees who, according to my clients that I work with in the finance industry, are going to relocate their entire homes to lifestyle places and opt to continue living at home. And that to them is going 100%. To be worth $100,000 a year in wage. You know, they'd rather live out there than park their car in near your office. They'd rather make their own lunch than go and buy lunches every day. They'd rather not spend the money on petrol. So that's a huge bargaining chip for the businesses of the future, isn't it?
I'm going to buy some real estate. I'm going to start saving up for some real estate at the end of the freeway, because I reckon it's got to go up in value surely with everyone working at home. Is it?
Perth Hills. Yeah. Go Perth Hills. Best spot.
All right. Well, I wouldn't live out there. You couldn't pay me to. One day. Perth is, you know, you've got to live in more exciting areas of Perth to keep your, well, I do anyway. Mm-hmm. I miss the big smoke sometimes, especially when I can't travel. But hopefully that'll change soon. Have you got a trendy mask, Carmen?
A trendy mask?
One of the surgical ones.
Yeah, I've been using disposable surgicals. Or before I went up to Kununurra last week with the show, I was there just as we...
You'd have to say a nice one.
And I just went and bought one from the chemist. No, and it's so... A guy on the plane told me it looked like two bra caps stuck together.
Would work. There's a backup.
It was an actual mask. I had this, like, beak thing, and it was, black. And I was wearing the Cobra up there the whole time, so it made me look like a Lady Ned Kelly, my mask. My mask's a bit boring. Oh, I have got one. I can't find it. Let me get it.
You sound like you've got a few.
Yeah, I've got a couple. I bought this one from a cool store that we went to with Destination WA called I can't remember the name, but My Life, down in Frio. And it's like cool kids' clothes, and I'm not a cool kid. I'm just going to disconnect my microphone while I find this thing. Hang on. It's worth it.
Oi, Marshall. Marty, come inside. Oh, here we are. This is interesting. And then we're going to see what Carmen's mask looks like. Well, my mask is pretty boring. And pretty smelly and dirty, to be honest, because I've been moving house. But by the time I get my new one, which I've ordered, we won't need them anymore. She's back. Let's take you off mute, shall we? Here we go. Can't unmute your guest. The mic isn't connected. So
I'm back.
Lacey's
now.
Still
How's
listening.
That?
Lacey's still here. We got a few people. Are you back? No, we can hear you now. Oh, hold on. Kill me with your 3-hour Zoom meeting.
Oh, I love it. So the hook of hearing what my mask or seeing what my mask looks like, probably not like enough to keep people here.
Well, we got a few people. Hey, we got all the crew from LinkedIn versus Instagram here. It's awesome.
Yeah, and it's so good. Great to see you guys. All right, so you ready?
The big reveal. Wait for it.
It's like wow. The most huge thing. It's got one of those.
Is that Jesus?
Jesus wept on my face.
Wow.
I just giggled when I saw it. And I bought it for my husband, but it's way too small for his head. So I've been wearing it. And it's, it sort of looks, if you do this, it's kind of like I've got Jesus's face.
it's kind of it's trendy, but then it's like when you see it, you're like, oh, that's deep. What does it mean? You know?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess I hoped it would be kitsch, not blasphemous. You know, that's my goal.
Yeah, like, I hear.
Struck a balance.
it's cooler than my one, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that's the coolest mask I have. What's your mask? You ordered one. You're saying.
No, but like this is what happens when things whenever anyone gets sick or there's a serious thing in the family or there's a lockdown, mum goes round to me and my sister's house with a survival box and in there so at the start of coronavirus she comes around with and in there's like two things of toilet paper, a bag full of masks, vitamin C, something else. And it's just like, here you go. All right, I'll see you when the lockdown ends.
That's so sweet. Your mum sounds like a legend again. Yep. Props to
she's incredible.
Mum.
Yeah.
Yeah, very
nice. Hey, Sonia, good to see you. I was speaking to Sonia earlier. She's going to help you with some search engine optimization. Bless her.
Legend.
It's all been happening. We're going to have to wrap up as we approach an hour. You've done well. You've captivated the audience. We've been engaged for an hour. Is there anything you would like to leave us with? And then I would also like, for the people that do want to know more about how they can work with you, obviously we're not doing a sales pitch here, but what would be the next step, for somebody that was looking for some help?
Look, here on LinkedIn, feel free to send me a direct message anytime and I will hook you up with the mailing list so you've got all the latest. I do like a weekly on-camera tip and that sort of thing.
Have you got an event coming up, though?
I have, actually. Yep. If we're in Perth, I have a Confidence on Camera, very last opportunity to work with me in person before hubby and I take this massive middle-of-the-year holiday for 3 months. We're going away.
Oh, wow. Well.
Yeah, cool. We're giving ourselves long service leave because we're both now self-employed and I mentioned that 18-year-old dependent isn't on our hands as much anymore. So, yeah, we're going away for 3 months. Yeah, so before that happens, one last in-person workshop. It's at Media Stable in Perth.
Yep.
On Friday, there's a booking link on my This Friday, it's soon. You can get in now if you're desperate to be with me and do that bit of training for a day. We'll have a professional videographer, camera operator, XTV there. They'll film everything you do, and then if you want to use any of it later, it's all yours. You know, you could use it as an opportunity to make some short little micro content like you're talking about.
I mentioned it to some of my clients because that sounds like a really good deal. I mean, getting some content out of it as well.
That's a bonus. Yeah, exactly. But don't be put off if you're not feeling ready to actually record stuff that you'll use. Come anyway. We will get you feeling more confident than you ever realized you could be. Promise. It'd be a good thing.
I'm sure I don't know you as well, but I'm sure you're a great guy too. Wow.
That's so sweet, Louise. I love Louise. She's the maker of the most comfortable shoes on the planet for women to wear in their workplaces.
Oh, really? Hence the emoji.
That way, hence the emoji. Yeah, yes, yes. Oh, there's someone who's coming on Friday. Yeah. There we go. That's good. Yeah. That's undefined user. Yeah. And yeah, that's my Instagram handle, On Camera with Carmen, if you want to find me there. I'm always there.
Yeah. I always enjoy watching your content on Instagram. Do a great job, and I've seen your stuff on LinkedIn, and it's equally as good. It's awesome. Keep up the LinkedIn stuff. I want to encourage you to keep it up because I really think you're doing a great job there as well. Thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time and sharing your story with us. And guys, do go and follow Carmen on Instagram and LinkedIn, and have a really, really good week in business, guys. Maybe kick a few goals off that goal list this week. I know I'm going to. Thanks for watching, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks so much, Carmen, for being here.
Thanks for having me. It was a wonderful opportunity. And, I appreciate the encouragement with LinkedIn. I'm going to keep working on it. And I hope that I get a few of my goals kicked off this week too. Thanks.
There we go.